Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. Please listen carefully because I'll ask you for topic to talk about. As you see, this verse is very base. There's not much there. Listen carefully to give me topics. Translation. O Emperor, now I am separated from my friend and dearest well-wisher, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And therefore, my heart appears to be void of everything. In his absence, I have been defeated by a number of infidel cowherds, men, while I was guarding the bodies of all the wives of Krishna. Purport. The important point in this verse is how it was possible that Arjuna could be defeated by a gang of ignoble cowherd men, and how such mundane cowherd men could touch the bodies of the wives of Lord Krishna, who were under the protection of Arjuna. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakura has justified the contradiction by research in the Vishnu Purana and Brahma Purana. So Vishwanatha Chakravarti always saves us. He pulls out clarifications. Okay, what says Purana? In these Puranas, it is said that once the fair denizens of heaven pleased Ashtavakra Muni by their service and were blessed by the Muni to have the Supreme Lord as their husband. Ashtavakra Muni was curved in 8 joints of his body, and thus he used to move in a peculiar curved manner. The daughters of the demigods could not check their laughter, and upon seeing the movements of the Muni, and the Muni, being angry at them, cursed them that they would be kidnapped by rogues, even if they would get the Lord as their husband. Later on, the girls again satisfied the Muni by their prayers, and the Muni blessed them that they would again regain their husband even after being robbed by rogues. So in order to keep the words of the great Muni, the Lord himself kidnapped his wives from the protection of Arjuna. Otherwise, they would have at once vanished from the scene as soon as they were touched by the rogues. Besides that, some of the gopis who prayed to become wives of the Lord returned to their respective positions after their desire was fulfilled. After the departure of Lord Krishna, he wanted all his entourage back to Godhead, and they were called back under different conditions only. What a drama, oh man. O Emperor, now I'm separated from the friend and dear most well-wisher, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and therefore my heart appears to be void of everything. In his absence, I have been defeated by the number of infidel cowherd men while I was guarding the bodies of all the wives of Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Okay. Again, one of those. I mean, this chapter is going on and on and on. It's like lamentation after lamentation. It's incredible what Pandavas go through. It's probably 3 chapters, even more. Just defeat. Okay. Another lamenting verse. Okay. So, we try to enter in the mind of Arjuna. That's all I can do with this verse. And try to feel what he feels. See? I was just wondering, is that kind of tinge, or not just tinge, but frustration in his mind? See, he realized that he got deprived of his ability completely. Like, you know, Kshatriya, Vedic Kshatriya, he's just a source of power and might and pride, and then just relying on his ability, and suddenly just gone, you know. And then he definitely suffers due to this defeat. Otherwise, he wouldn't mention all the time through these verses, I was defeated this way, I was defeated this way, I was able to do this, now I cannot. He's kind of lamenting or lost his power. His pride is so cut down, you see. Deprived of his ability. He sort of feel I'm useless, kind of, you know. Everything is useless, yeah. It's void. Again, so many times he mentioned this, all is void, Krishna is gone. So, It is interesting that Krishna kind of smashes first everything which we have, and then he comes. He always comes in the last point, like, but really in the last point. So it's kind of interesting to ask. This last point he comes, and then you easily can lose your patience, you know, doubt in his existence even. See. It is because we take shelter of so many other things. We are made of these layers of protection, you know, gross and mental and all ability we have. Until we exhaust each one of them, we're not going to be able to call for Krishna, even as a devotee, unless trained and really learn this art to totally depend on Krishna in every circumstances, regardless of our abilities. We can do so many things as young people. Anyone feels young anyway, it doesn't matter. Until you point to going to grave, you feel you have some shakti. So until this is dismantled, Krishna is not gonna, we will not be able to call Krishna. It's interesting. We know the story, Draupadi and a few others. Krishna is just waiting, you know, when this will be fully calling for me, you know, just waiting, you know, maybe chanting japa around, God save, when you're gonna. Joke, maybe that's. But, you know, when he's gonna. So, this is a very hard point to come to, see. He does want to interfere, see. Because we always call him for something else, you know. It's incredible, you know. He's not imposing, like, you know, to intrude against our free will, see. So, what it takes, really, to call sincerely for Krishna, with deep heart, like, what it takes. My goodness, this is like a question of life and death, you know. Or sometimes we call Krishna for help, but we are not there yet, like, you know. Because after all, you can say we are conditioned souls. You know, Krishna, I'm not able 100%. I'm living this material world for so long, depending on so many things. I call for you, no other way, but, you know, it's not maybe 100%, but why Krishna doesn't intrude, and, you know, he knows. So, we are conditioned souls. So in that moment, Krishna may not come, most probably. So there's a big, big room for doubt in the entire process, in entire Krishna consciousness. You know, life will bring us to that point at least once in life. The real test, you know. So what it takes, yeah. Did you ever feel that? Did you actually ever feel that? Have you ever been in a situation which is just desperate, you know, you cannot make it on your own? And then did you call for Krishna? Anyone? Did you really call 100%? Just waiting, okay, I'll pray, but may something happen, somebody may come. So. But this is how Krishna acts also. Like I said, Krishna protects those who protect themselves. They said, you know, put your seatbelt. Oh, you know, devotee should not be attached. But put your seat belt, it's there, Krishna put it there for you. You know, it's not something overly mystical. He may come like a kind of lightning bolt or something and do something, but all these small things around, just use intelligence. And this is how Krishna set up everything, because knowing us, use that to protect yourself. It may be that. This is one version. But, to come to that, like 100%, that's a, you know, sorry, my laptop is a little bit dodgy. Okay. So anyway, back to Arjuna. He's totally defeated, a powerful kshatriya, smashed, and he wants to die. He said, what's the point for continuing to live? There's no power anymore. So, kshatriya without might, he's not even human. He doesn't consider himself to be a human being even. Kshatriya without might, he's a man. Future is gone. So, but all this drama is set up by Krishna. The Pandavas renounce this world. He set up for all of them that realize that's it. So, this is Krishna's arrangement for them, to shake them. Okay, finish. We create desperation in them to end up this material life, you know. So I don't know what we would do in this hopelessness. I mean, I was nearly there a few times, like everything is kind of, my life is just totally turned upside down. This is just a confusion state. Like, I mean, I always tend to blame Krishna, you know, or just be blank. I don't know what to think. I don't understand circumstances. I don't understand a lesson I have to take. So much loss of, you know, of everything, of time, of energy, of resources. You don't know. But I was talking the other day to one devotee. You don't need to know, actually. When you think really, like imagine that. I mean, this which I was thinking, you know, you see, karma is so accumulated there. God knows what I was, you know, and then this must be cleared out in some way, you know. It's big karma for me to make step forward. I don't need to understand why. It's the accumulation of so many reactions. So just going through suffering to kind of diminish this a little bit, to be able to breathe. That's all I can, you know, combat. See, so when it's hopeless, often you may not understand why it's happening, see. After all, even Mayavadis, why they renounce the world? Because total frustration anymore, like they're saturated with no more. You cannot extract anything from this world. Just brings frustration, sooner or later. So renounce, merge. So, point is, very interesting thing that what was our idea when we were thinking to come to spiritual life? I just tell you my, to save the time. It's like peace, tranquility, to be connected with the universe. You know, all these, you can say, cheesy ideas. But we come, we understand what it is, that raga-dvesha is a main feature of this material world, sankalpa-vikalpa. But it's also of spiritual world. What's happening when you read Srimad Bhagavatam? Either two things, you yearning to meet Krishna, or you lament severely due to separation. Is that spiritual life? It has never peace, even there. Of course, nature of there is totally different. Prabhupada said, even separation or suffering there is total bliss. But that's when you understand what that actually is. You know, that raga dvesha is nature of both. Factually, you're always missing something in this material world. There's always something which is not right there. Just a little bit more, a little bit this. Something isn't right. You know. So if we don't feel separation from Krishna, we definitely feel separation from something material. So there's always this separation from, we are not right there, see. So now, we seek equilibrium, that's our idea. And we come to spiritual life, but it seems to me it doesn't happen even within practicing spiritual life, you see. So there's the idea of peace of mind, for example, idea of nirvana in Buddhist philosophy is very palatable, attractive, like total peace. This is, nirvana is simply a Brahma-Buddha state, which we hope for, we read about, we would like to have. Again, our ideas are there, we want to have this peace, na shrochati, na kankshati, samansarvashi bhuteshu, you know, no lamentation, no hankering, and that's a great happiness there. But it's very rarely to happen. Even if you meet like very old senior Buddhist monk, I've seen few, and they admit every now and then something jolts them out from their so-called peace. It just doesn't exist so, it's so rarely. Buddha may be achieved. Maybe somebody else. It's very rare. It just jolts you out. Only thing, by practicing spiritual life, one thing happens is that you quickly come out of it. Ashutosh, like Lord Shiva. Quickly get angered or whatever. But you quickly come out of it, it's over. That's our kind of fortune. We don't dwell on this, you know. That's our fortune. So that's a benefit of it, and Nirvana. Actually, how many persons, due through Srimad Bhagavatam, you know, who attained Brahma Buddha state? Name somebody. Do you know anyone? There are few who had this total equilibrium. Cannot remember, because it's so rare. Bhagavad Gita said Brahma Buddha. It tells you what is Brahma Buddha. But to achieve that state, it's just not, it doesn't happen in this age. You know anyone? Come on, name somebody. You read Srimad Bhagavatam. Anyone? Any sage, any sadhu, and anyone who attained this? Come on. At the end, yeah, Parikshit Maharaj. Prabhupada, yeah, he was always easy to switch. But he would be angry sometimes. He was so angry sometimes. But next moment, whoosh. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah, of course, not a person. It was just to instruct, yeah. Huh? Jadwarat, yeah. I mean, I can remember this Avaduta, which Prahlad Maharaj met, Python, yoga, then Lord Shabadev. This is best example. It's incredible what he was going through. Like even this Avanti Brahmana, first he was suffering and harassed. He was harassed even by sadhus, Avanti Brahmana, because before he was so miserly and nobody liked him. And then even when we would go to hermitage, even sadhus, munis, they would just laugh at him, spit at him. Imagine. I mean, how Muni can do this? But somehow or other, this happened. Until he got to this equilibrium, he was never disturbed. So this is so rare. So just kind of highlight that this is so rare, this Brahma Buddha state, which is our idea at the beginning of spiritual life, even later on, see. Like different kind of yoga also have these ideas. The other day I was reading of Kriya Yoga. Again, I mean, sorry, maybe it's not, but I was before very attracted to this Paramahamsa Yogananda. He's like kind of eyes, like, but this philosophy is also, you know, and, you know, connect the universe, tune in to this yoga, you know, through the spine cord, you connect to the earth, to everything. And then finally, you are the drop, and supreme is like an ocean. You are like a wave, he's like a big ocean. And you, what? You merge. That's a finally. But then even when you somehow merge, what Prabhupada says? You have to come back at some point. This merging is like, you know, you get bored of it, see. You want peace, you want to be free from everything, see. Now, I'll talk some other angle here. See, we're just meditating on this verse. So in all of us, there is an innate desire to merge. Do you believe that? It is. Because desire to merge is kind of considered ultimate point of happiness. See, ultimate idea of sense gratification. To become that sense gratification itself. See, I'm not talking just about merging into Brahman. Let's hear this. So any desire to enjoy any sense object is finally desire to merge into it, to become one. Because we are interested in this sensation which any sense object gives us. Okay, last one example. Maybe Sarvi will not like this. You observe the nature. You are a nature lover. It's so beautiful, so like amazing. What is in your back of your mind? You like to enjoy this incessantly. You want to simply dissolve, become one of it, with it, with this beauty, with this sense of energy. If you remove Krishna out of it. See, if you don't see Krishna in it as a source of this beauty, there is no substance. This is the same with everything. You want to just become one with that sensation, with that enjoyment, see. So, because it's like, idea, this is the strongest peak of enjoyment, is to become that very energy of enjoyment, which simply leads to dissolve our physical existence. See, that's a thing. Anything like eating, we don't need just to fill our belly. Of course, we are starving, you need. But main item of eating is this enjoyment of taste. You chew, and you feel really relishing. And then a few moments, drops to the stomach. And we all have desire that this never ends, that the stomach never gets filled up. Because we want this sensation. We don't want this to fill the belly, isn't it? So we want to prolong forever this sense of pleasure or touching something. I don't say about sex life. Two bodies want to merge, you become one. Because of this sensation, this idea, final idea, or taking drugs. Okay, one more shoot. With hope that I will achieve this, stay high forever. So this is in everything else. We want to merge and become that. See? That's the thing. So forever to be this kind of in this state. But due to the limitation of the body, what we do, we're coming back to it again and again and again. Just see this thing, like how much this body, gross senses, can enjoy. It's very limited. I mean, we know that. Anything is very limited. How much mind can enjoy? Far, far greater you would like to enjoy because it's subtle. How you can enjoy? Through this body. How much body can give enjoyment to the mind? Very limited. Body just filled up stuff. I cannot anymore. You feel signals down. I don't want. The mind just shut up. I want more. I'm not happy. You know, just. And then what happened? You just stuff yourself to the neck. The mind is not satisfied. And the next level, how much capacity of the soul is to enjoy? Unlimited. Jai Shri Shirada Gokulanda, Sitaram Lakshman Man, Jai Shri Gonitai. How much capacity of the soul is to enjoy? It's so great, unlimited. And how can soul enjoy in conditioned state? Through the mind. How much mind can give enjoyment to the soul? Conditioned mind. Limited. And mind can get enjoyment through the senses. So that's all frustration. Total frustration for conditioned souls. See? Therefore we want to merge. Because of this limitation we can surpass by merging. That's a final point. See? Until total exhaustion, that's usually happens. You cannot control the mind. You don't have a knowledge. You try and try and try. You become slave of it. Total frustration in the end. See? So, back to the verse, and again, as I say, so many lamentations through these verses, again and again, you know. Arjuna is totally down, see. When Krishna is gone, everything is gone. When you remove Krishna from everything, there is no substance to it. That's the thing. And Arjuna, encounter with cowherds is very interesting, you know. First he saw them coming, taking queens. He was boosting. Oh, you cowherd boys. You know, you think that you can just take this queen just like that. You know, I'll show you now by my might, by my power. You know, see. I will send you in the abode of Yamaraj. And what Arjuna did? Okay, take me my Gandiva bow. What happened? Arjuna couldn't string his bow. First, it was so heavy suddenly. What's going on? Arjuna couldn't string the bow. As I mentioned before, Gandiva bow has 108 strings. He couldn't string even one. What's going on? I show you. And a cowherd was just laughing at him. Laughing. And queens, most probably they were disgusted. He was just like a eunuch. Just couldn't string. And managed somehow to string one. And took his arrows. Bang, like a kid playing, 5 years old kid, sometimes you see they have this Ramayana and tale of Hanuman, and they have this string, but they cannot pull this arrow just in the middle of the bow, but on the end, down, blowing, you know, 1 yard, shoot. So this is what Arjuna did. He put these arrows and shoot, and then not, they didn't do any harm. He missed the target, even reached the cowherd, or they're shooting the ground. And then he realized, you know, Krishna is gone. He's all gone. His lamentation was unbearable, you know. What's going on? And his quiver also got exhausted. Unexhausted quiver of arrows was also gone. And then cowherds were just laughing and just took queens away. See? And then he came to Indraprast to narrate all this. Just share this frustration with somebody. It was Yudhishthira there. Look at what happened. But after a few days, he met Yudhishthira, he met Vyasadeva. Then Vyasadeva explained to him what actually happened. He said, before, long ago, these damsels of heaven were going to some festival on Mount Meru. And then, on the way, there was a Ashtavakra Muni sitting in the lake, meditating. So they thought, let us take benediction from him. So gathered there, they worship him, they, you know, give him worship, satisfied him. And he was very happy. He said, what do you want, what benediction? He said, we want Krishna as our husband. He said, let it be. But then when Ashtavakra Muni got up from the water and started to walk, Ashtavakra means eight places. His body was totally bent in eight places. He was walking very weird, funny. So they couldn't check love. I mean, I wouldn't be able to check. Sometimes, you know, you see something funny, even as a devotee, you just can't, you know. And the Muni was, you know, these Munis are very touchy. Often, I was so angry. Oh, you're laughing. By the way I walk, the way I look, I will curse you. So that infidel rogues will steal you from your husband. And they were devastated. Ah, no. And then they were worshipping him again. And somehow they pleased him. He said, okay, Ashutosh, that's Ashutosh. Clicky. Okay, I'll give you benediction that you'll be again reunited with your husband. So that's a damsels of heaven. So when Krishna asked all demigods to descend to help Krishna's pastimes, these damsels came again. So now is the one interesting thing here that Krishna's associates are eternal. How is that, you know, what he has to do with demigods, jivas? You know, Krishna comes with his entourage. How that demigods needs to come? You know, what he has to do with demigods? But it's mentioned in maybe 12th canto that every demigod, every Krishna's associate, eternal associate who came with Krishna, there was a particular demigod to merge into his body, to experience these pastimes of Krishna within their body. Even Yashoda and Nanda, there are certain qualified person, demigods, even yogis, muni, whatever. So in that sense, when you sometimes argue, how is that like Vasudeva Devaki, they say they are not Nitya Siddhas, only Nanda Maharaj and Yashoda. And there is many, many questions. And then what's the name of Dara? Is that Yashoda and Nanda there in previous life? Drona and Dara. So what they have to perform so severe austerities? They're Nitya Siddhas. This happened the same. You know, their desire is fulfilled through this. So these demigods are descendant to experience, and after that, some of them, I guess, so, got liberated. Some went back to their position. Like, can I help? I remember this lizard. What's his name? King Huhu, is he? No, Huhu, but Nriga, you know. After seeing Krishna, being touched by Krishna, I said, can I go back to my heavenly planet? You could be liberated, but somehow. So that's the same with demigods. They could be liberated, but some of them went back to their own respective places, because this needs to be fulfilled also, post. So. And then Arjuna was pacified with that. He realized that actually there's a Krishna who steals them all. to fulfill their desires, you see. So, now Brahmajyoti, in the sense that I exhausted my notes, please say something in 5 minutes. It's your turn. If anyone has something to say or ask or whatever.
Thank you for the class, Prabhu. You mentioned nature and all these things and merging into objects and, you know, desires and senses. But also, maybe you could give... there are two sides, or maybe more. So it's... there are people who actually, you know, they are where they are because of their realizations. So that's where they are. And you have some people who will hug trees for some reason. They're getting something from it. Well, maybe we should let them hug trees.
Yeah, yeah. There's no problem with that.
The other thing is this merging thing. There is a tendency to, because we're made up of the same atoms, in the human being, in the wherever you look, the stars, the moon, yeah, the trees, the plants, same atom. It's because it's made from matter, and we also, a part of us is from matter, is matter. So there is a tendency to want to relate to other objects in the material world. I mean, that should be observed as well. Yeah. That's there. There's a pull, because there's a synergy between us and nature, which is inseparable. It's not something we can... It will go on until eternity, as long as we're in a material world. We can relate to things because we same constitution in terms of the body, what we're made up of. And the other thing is we can observe, but we don't have to merge. The other thing, there are people who actually use nature for purely for observation because nature is actually a guru, believe it or not. And the other point is some people use it for medicine or for meditation. And it can help.
Yes.
It can help. These things, that, you know, so... We shouldn't really see nature as maybe something that we should try to avoid. it can be very useful.
Definitely. These are all levels connecting whatever medicine. You know, these are all levels. Ultimately, subconscious desire is to take this experience of appreciation and just to become one with that. There's nothing wrong with that. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's the ultimate, you know, like not to come with that because it's so pleasing,
you know. Yes, but there's a point you should actually, we could make here, is that you can see it as Krishna energy.
That's the point I made before.
And then when you see it as Krishna energy, you appreciate
it. That's the main ingredient.
You appreciate it even the more.
Yeah.
You
that's
see?
A thing. That's
and
a
then
thing,
whatever you do with it, that's fine because it's Krishna's energy. Yeah. And if you have that realization.
Yeah, definitely. If you don't have that, that's what happened. If you see Krishna in it, in everything, not just observing nature, anything, what Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, least in all what I am. And then this appreciation just even manifold. It's incredible. You appreciate how wonderful, beautiful, almighty Krishna is, and it's so personal, and his source of that, it displays just like that, all this beauty, incredible energy. God knows what's happening in other universes, you just can't even imagine. And he's the source of it. That's the main thing, even to that. If you see Krishna to that, this will be your stepping stone. And Prabhupada said, like the other, sometime in, on the beach, devotees were walking, and then it was sunset, beautiful sunset somewhere, maybe Laguna Beach or somewhere. And then one devotee said, oh, Prabhupada, look at, isn't that so beautiful? And Prabhupada said, if you think that, something like you'll come again and again and again to this material world, if you get attached to anything, just by this beauty, oh, it's beautiful. But if you see Krishna, then you can be stepping stone, like for devotees, personify that. It's like a stepping stone. Just step on his head. You know, you don't get carried and pulled by anything. You appreciate, but you just walk up there. That's the thing in everything. Yeah, definitely. Okay. Prayojan.
Uh, It's interesting how Bhaktivinoda Thakur has actually got all the answers. He put it in simple terms. He says, I've become supremely happy. I no longer belong to myself. And he says, why? He says, because happiness and distress are equally great riches. And it says, why? He then says, why? He says, because they destroy ignorance. And to become, we don't belong to ourselves. Krishna says in chapter 4, text 35, he says, having understood this knowledge from the self-realized soul, one will never fall into illusion. For why? By this knowledge, you will see that all living beings are part of me.
Mine.
And that they belong to me.
Yes.
And so, but it's not a possessive thing. It means our character is service in somebody else's happiness. And then Prabhupada says, Srimati Radharani, she says, even if you hug me, or make me brokenhearted, or not be present before me, that is, you're always my Lord, Bertha, you're always my Lord, continuously, because if my unhappiness brings you happiness, that's my happiness. And there's the little story where there's a man who was, he was always grumpy in a village. Always grumpy.
Like Avanti Brahmana also.
Yeah. No. And he said, and then all of a sudden, one day, he started singing and dancing. And they said, what happened to you? He said, one day, I thought, no. What's the point? There's nothing happy in this world. And he says, when he gave up trying to be happy, that's when he became happy. And it's worth considering. It's when we're looking for something for ourselves, that's our unhappiness.
Well, you know that, yeah.
Directly we look. But in others' happiness, that's our happiness.
Only devotees can think like that. See, that's the point. Yeah. Only devotees can have this realization.
It's true. Yeah. And that's the character of the living force. Character.
Yeah.
The character of the living force is Chaitanya. And the character of the living force means servant. That's our happiness. That's the character of the soul. It only wants to give. So, I don't know if that made any sense.
It does. If not, you want to merge. That's the point. That's only two things. You serve or you merge. Okay, let's merge out from this room. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Srila Bhagavatam ki jai.